Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
Hell in the Cell pay-per-view. This is episode 134, Pancakes and Power Slams. We are live, as always. A whole lot to cover, and we will continue to have so much fun as we do every single week. 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. And we are also going to have tons of fun. Continue to support us through Pancakes and Power Slams, through the trivia, through everything else that is going to happen here. Again, 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. We're going to have a really fun evening tonight, and I'm really, really excited about continuing to talk wrestling as we do always. And Hell in a Cell reaction. We are going to talk about that as well as Raw. We had an interesting return and some interesting things that happened for Raw. So 347-884-8452 is the number call live, and we're going to continue to have a lot of fun. Once again, thank you everybody for continuing to listen. And just within the 2.5 years that we've been up, just the numbers are just so awesome through all the avenues that we are with, just with Wrestling Inc. and Beach Report and WeAreWrestling.net and just a number of different affiliations that we with also write for WhatCulture.com. Just a lot of pro wrestling writing that that is in my blood. I love writing about pro wrestling, and I just thank you for all the people who have offered me positions and spots on their show, and even people that offer me. I've actually had interviews to be on books, be in books, and so that's always very fun and exciting. Our co-host Derek will be joining us shortly. And we are going to get right into it. Well, of course, we have the Pancakes and Power Slams trivia that we have every week and that we're well known for throughout the past 2.5 years that we've been on air. Other than our awesome interview series, and shout out to everybody who's been a part of our interview series. And we have some interesting interviews coming up here soon as well. So be sure to stay tuned for that. And, of course, we are the new Tuesday Night Titans, and we are going to continue to have much, much, much fun with 135 episodes now. We've had 134 episodes in, and this is 135 strong. I'm just continuing to be amazed by just the support throughout the weeks and the months and now the years. It's crazy to realize that we've been on the air for that long, for 135 weeks. That's insane. That we started this amazing project in early 2012, April of 2012, we started this amazing project, and 2.5 years later, we are still on the air strong. That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. And just go in the archives. Check us out on iTunes.com and go in the archives. Subscribe to our iTunes. You get to get to our podcast every week. And you'll be able to see just the growth and the evolution of Pancakes and Power Slams and all the previous interviews and all the Flavor of the Week topics that we've talked about over the past 2.5 years, 135 episodes in. So continue to support. Thank you very much for the support. And our very first show back in April of 2012, you'll be able to see that. So 2.5 years in, and thank you so much for continuing to support Pancakes and Power Slams. All right, let's get into Hell in a Cell. Hell in a Cell, very, very interesting pay-per-view that's had the ability to have a really, really good outcome to it. For weeks, there were many people that were talking about what match should be at the very end, whether it be John Cena versus Randy Orton or Dean Ambrose versus Seth Rollins, what Hell in a Cell match should be last, and many people, the internet wrestling community, that of course they were very high on the Dean Ambrose Seth Rollins match being the last one of the night. But up until really the last minute, WWE felt it wasn't top billing enough, and they it was supposed to be Cena versus Orton, and until the last minute. And I can understand the logic from the WWE standpoint, because they want more established stars to be a part of the main events, especially something to that nature. As far as a Hell in a Cell match, we've never seen a Hell in a Cell match between Ambrose and Rollins, and so it was uncharted territory. And I can totally understand, why the WWE has decided to do that. So understandable, totally understandable. But they gave them the rub. They gave Ambrose and Rollins the rub. And so kudos to them. I definitely think it was a great idea to do that. I tweeted during the show. I said I don't think that they're top billing. Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins aren't main event players yet, but hey, kudos to them for giving them the opportunity to really showcase themselves on a main event scene, especially Hell in a Cell. So it was interesting, and of course we'll get into more detailed version of the aftermath of that, and how I feel about whether that was a good idea to have them as a main event or not. In the meantime, in between time, the chat room continue to load up, and be ready to get your signaling buttons out to answer these questions, and also on Twitter at Crave Wrestling. The first question is, Test, Hardcore Holly, Big Show, or Ken Shamrock? Which was not a member of the union? Which was not a member of the union? Again, Test, Hardcore Holly, Big Show, Ken Shamrock. Which was not a member of the union? All right, let's get into Hell in a Cell. We have Mark Henry defeating Bo Dallas in the pre-show. The whole four loss thing, I ranted before. I thought it was a horrible idea. And I thought that this was going to lead into Mark Henry having a big mean streak. We saw that eventually, but just for Bo Dallas to beat him, just for it to lead to a pre-show match, a pre-show squash, that to me that just doesn't make sense at all as far as the logic of WWE booking. You lose four times to get someone that you squash in, you know, seconds, and so just really, really weird to me. I was happy that he squashed Bo Dallas, but, you know, I'm not happy that it was at the expense of four losses against Bo Dallas. Bo Dallas is not a rising character. They tried to give him some love initially with how many he won, 11 in Bo or 12 in Bo. Record that he had initially, and then when he, you know, the R-Truth, I believe it was R-Truth that he lost to, that broke the streak. That was very odd. I'm a fan of R-Truth, but it was very odd that they decided to allow R-Truth to be the one that broke the streak. But I think it should have been broken. It just didn't make any sense to have that type of streak for Bo Dallas because, you know, anybody who comes in and is not like a Goldberg-style character, that his gimmick is based on a streak and people are – he was way over in the WCW and the streak was really – I mean, it was really his bread and butter. It really made him someone. It really helped Goldberg – get the meteoric rise that he did in the WCW because he had the streak as a part of his gimmick. Someone who comes in like Bo Dallas, who, you know, doesn't look intimidating at all. His, you know, ring skills are decent, you know, from what we saw in NXT. But he comes in and saying an undefeated streak. I mean, nobody's going to buy the fact that you're going to be undefeated in the WWE. So it just wasn't a good idea. And now he's just kind of floundering in the mid-card. There's no type of ascension that's, you know, prepared for Bo Dallas at all. And I just really don't think that we will see any of that. And that's the thing. And that's what's interesting about someone like a Bo Dallas. And I just really hope that, you know, we don't see some type of I hope we don't see another type of streak going on or him beating a lot of people again, because it just really didn't make any sense. It wasn't worth it. And Mark Henry beating Bo Dallas was really, really good. I was a big fan of it, actually. But, you know, it set up for what happened on Raw, and we'll get to that soon. Again, the question on board right now is you have Test, Hardcore Holly, Big Show, and Ken Shamrock. Absolutely. Good job. Hardcore Holly is the correct answer. Great job there. And, yes, because Test and Big Show and Ken Shamrock was a part of the union, a very interesting faction by the WWE. Back in, I believe it was 99 or 2000, they were just a bunch of corporation rejects. And it was a tester. It was really a test faction of people just being thrown together. And they even had endorsements for a while from both Austin and The Rock. But yeah, it just really didn't last because there just wasn't a lot of investment in the group as a whole. It was more like Mick Foley is disgruntled and he brought a few people with him, but it just really didn't. Yeah, it was not 99. It only lasted for a month, really. I mean, they had some affiliates, and they were going, you know, they were going with a couple of angles, but it just really doesn't make it just really didn't make sense much after a while. And you know, that was the best thing that was going for all of them at the time, but at the same time, it didn't really last long, and it made sense why it didn't last long. So next question we have is, name the four current and former world champs from the class of 2002. Name the four current and former world champions from the class of 2002. Getting into the main pay-per-view, we have Dolph Ziggler defeating Cesaro in the 2 out of 3 falls match. Dolph Ziggler wins 2 straight falls, and I really can't think of a time that someone won 2 straight falls outside of Austin, stunning Steve Austin defeating Dustin Rhodes for the U.S. title eons ago. And I really can't think of anybody else. And anybody who's listening, let us know if you can think of anybody else that has won 2 straight falls in a match. Let us know. But it was an interesting idea. It didn't help Cesaro at all. However, I will say that it did a good job with pushing Ziggler, because the losing streak that Dolph Ziggler was in recently, I believe it was about 4 or 5 straight losses that he had. I said before, it was just a horrible idea, horrible idea. And I just don't like the fact that they are just continuing to have Intercontinental champions lose, or just really mid-card champions, specifically Intercontinental champions, lose their matches or lose non-title matches just randomly before they have some big match. I totally don't like that. I think it's a horrible idea, and just a really, really bad booking decision for the WWE to do that. And I wouldn't call this a full redemption, but I will call it a step in the right direction, especially what we saw on Raw. I think Dolph Ziggler needs to be pushed. He's over with the fans. He's a good wrestler. He's a good gimmick. His character's cool. And I definitely think that having the Intercontinental Championship is good for him, only if it's booked correctly. And what bothers me is that the WWE kind of says things to really pull our strings in a negative direction. I've kept hearing a bunch of, this is the most prestigious championship. I think Cole said it, Michael Cole. I think I remember hearing Alex Riley saying it too. And come on now, if you want to give the Intercontinental Championship that title of being the most prestigious championship, you're going to have to give us one of those time devices from Man in Black and have us look at it and make us forget about a dozen years, because the Intercontinental Championship has not been prestigious in quite some time. So if you want to use that term, the especially not just prestigious, but the most prestigious is what I was hearing. It's mind-boggling to me how the most prestigious is being used with the Intercontinental Championship. I would say back in the early 2000s, even 03, you know, was good. I think that's really when it lost its prestige. I think the prestige went down probably around 10 years ago or so. Booker T and Christian and, you know, their feuds were good. And, you know, Shelton Benjamin was an amazing wrestler, but I would even say when, you know, he won, when he was winning the championship and, you know, his class of winning the Intercontinental Championship, even really, Shelton Benjamin, Carlito, although they were really good Intercontinental champions, that's when the WWE really looked at the Intercontinental Championship as a mid-card title. And I didn't like that because back in the early 90s, the Intercontinental Champion, you want to talk about prestige, that's when you get the prestige. That's when we can have a very good argument about it being prestigious because when you have the Intercontinental Championship at that time, it was almost a shoe-in to win the World Heavyweight Championship. I would say probably someone like Mr. Perfect was really the only person that was an established Intercontinental Champion at the time that did not ascend into being a world champion. I mean, you have Randy Savage as an established Intercontinental Champion. I would say Honky Tonk Man, too. He wasn't a world title contender at the time. But, I mean, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, I mean, just the Ultimate Warrior is another person who was at that time. Rick Rude was a good Intercontinental Champion. He became world champion in WCW after he left. But, I mean, it was nearly a lock for the Intercontinental Champions around that time to become an established, at least an established name. Because even that Kurt Hennig didn't win the World Heavyweight Championship, neither did Roddy Piper, but both of them are Hall of Famers now. So that's where I'm going. If you're not going to become a world champion, at least you made your legacy in your singles career as being a Intercontinental Champion. Because you have someone else like British Bulldog, who's not a Hall of Famer yet, but he's had a Hall of Fame career and he's been Intercontinental Champion. So, and he'll be in the Hall of Fame, you know, very soon. So the WWE when they want to use words like prestigious, you know, they need to revive those moments. And even in the late 90s, when you have, you know, your Austins and your Rocks and your Triple H, you know, even those times, the Attitude Era times, you know, you had those three, you know, the three biggest names that came out of that era other than The Undertaker and Foley, three of them were Intercontinental Champions. So if we want to talk about this Intercontinental Championship, we need to not just make it some type of mid-card championship for someone comedic to win. Now, I've been saying that Damian Mizdow should win it, and I'm saying that because that it will help his character. He's over. It could work. But I'm only saying that, to be honest with you, I'm only saying that because of the state of the title at this time. What I would truly prefer is for the WWE to revive the championship in the prestigious matter that they say that they are, that they coin it to be. If this is the most prestigious championship in the WWE, in the next year, I need to see more Intercontinental champions become world champions then? Because, you know, that has been a curse of a championship the past at least half a dozen years. It's been a curse of a title, and it hasn't really had much prestige at all. So if we want to bring that prestige title, if we want to be very honest with it, and great job on the answer, Batista, Lesnar, Cena, and Orton. If we want to coin that type of status for the Intercontinental Championship, we must, you know, don't have this type of title to the crowd as if we have no clue of the prestige of the Intercontinental Championship or even the state of the Intercontinental Championship. You know, don't shortchange us of our knowledge of pro wrestling and say that this is the most prestigious title. Just doesn't make any sense at all. So let's go to the next. Bout, which was Nikki Bella defeating Brie Bella. Now, I do understand how. Oh man, I understand the importance of this feud as far as trying to do something with it. Outside of, I suppose, just really living up to the hype of the turn, which was at SummerSlam. I understand that, but the past 2 months has been just really awful for this feud. They even threw in Nikki Bella in the title hunt to really just kind of not drag the storyline even more, and it just doesn't make sense. It just didn't make sense at all, and it was just a bad idea for them to string it along. Now, with that being said, the match wasn't horrible. It wasn't a horrible match, but I'm so done with the feud that I can go without it. And I really hope that we don't see another match. Now, granted, Nikki Bella won, which I knew that was going to happen, because usually when you have stipulations like this, the heel usually wins to drag the storyline out a little bit more, and then eventually the babyface wins. But it's going to be really tough to get to the, it's going to be really tough to see the payoff from this because she's the personal assistant for another month. We have to see more of this feud, and a month comes from now. Does that lead to another match? If that's the case, I surely don't hope so. And we just need a payoff match. I just really hoped that this was like a Hell in a Cell match. I mean, I didn't want to see three Hell in a Cell matches, but if there was any match that could have been, if there was any women's match in WWE history in the Hell in a Cell from 97 when the Hell in a Cell started, if there was any women's match, Divas match that could have happened in the confines of a cell, it definitely could have been this one, because you have the sibling rivalry, you have the big turn, you have the endorsement by Stephanie McMahon, so it could have worked. I really wish that would have been the payoff of this, because what's next? What other layers can you put on this feud? There's nothing else that you can put in this feud unless Daniel Bryan comes back, a month from now. But John Cena's dating Nikki Bella, so Cena's not going to be a heel, and Daniel Bryan's not going to be a heel because Bree's the face, And so, I mean, even if you throw that in, it's just not going to make any sense. So I don't see anything coming out of the, even with the stipulation, I don't see anything coming out of it. And I just really hope that the WWE gives us something different. This, the whole Divas picture altogether has been just a real big flop in the past couple of months. They've been really stringing along feuds, and I definitely think that the Paige and AJ Lee feud helped. It helped Paige, but again, it just was dragged on just a little bit too much, and we just need a total reset. Forget Total Divas. We need a total reset of Divas feuds right now. They have the talent to make it work. Like, for instance, Naomi, she's an amazing wrestler. As a matter of fact, the two best wrestlers on, I mean, you can throw in AJ Lee, but other than AJ Lee, the two best wrestlers in the WWE are Naomi and Natalya, and those are the two people who seem like lose the most. So it's not about ability. What it seems like, it's not about ability. It's about appearance, and that's unfortunate because we remember the days of Leilani Kai and, you know, Leilani Kai and Rockin' Robin and the Fabulous Moolah and Medusa, well, Alundra Blaze when she was in the WWE. But we remember those days when they were like in leotards, even like Bull Nakano, you know, back in the early 90s and mid-90s. We remember days like that and names like that, and they were like Wendi Richter's another person. And, you know, we remember people like that that were in leotards, but they would tear the house down when it comes to good wrestling. Nowadays, you have someone like Eva Marie, who just stunk up the place when she went against Bayley about a couple months ago. She went against Bayley on NXT, and it was the worst. It was absolutely horrible. So I really hope that, you know, this Nikki Bella and Brie Bella feud ends. I mean, after this 30-day thing, I don't have no clue where it's going to go, but I'm glad I have my boy Derek here online. And maybe he'll give us a solution of where this Nikki Bella and Brie Bella feud is going to go, although he is not a fan of the Divas division.
It's going to go straight down the toilet. Hello, Pancakes and Power Slam. This is Derek, your correspondent. And, yeah, what are we going to do with these girls? How about you just put them on E, leave them there, and find some really good in-ring talent, bring them aboard, and let's get the Divas division going. I really don't see a solution to this. It's boring. It was boring from the start. I mean, a lot of questions come up. They don't know what to do with this angle. I mean, what have they done? They've had Stephanie McMahon come out and say that, oh, they're having an affair with his masseuse or whatever it was. And what happened to that?
Yeah.
Wouldn't she be upset with her husband for having an affair? You never hear anything about that anymore, because they thought maybe this is an angle. They went as far as actually put it in the ring, and then it's all of a sudden forgotten. I didn't forget about it because it was horrible, just like the whole thing is.
Yeah.
You mentioned a lot of the older names back in the day with Wendi Richter and Rockin' Robin, Medusa. You had the Fabulous Moolah. You had these women that were just absolutely awesome wrestling. You could watch it, and it was believable. And it still wasn't my favorite segment, obviously. I wanted to see the dudes and Hulk Hogan and British Bulldogs get in there. But I could sit through it and watch it and nod my head and say, that was good. Good performance. You can't say that anymore. And at least I haven't said it in months, years, decades.
Well, decades, yeah.
The solution is put them on E and don't bring them back to WWE. I mean, honestly, I don't see what else they can do. Or just drop the angle altogether, just forget about it like we forgot about Daniel Bryan's supposed affair.
Yeah, and even with the Wendi Richters and the the Fabulous Moolah. The Fabulous Moolah had, I mean, she had an amazing, first of all, she's a Hall of Famer, and second of all, she had an amazing heel persona that was really good, and it was a standalone character that really worked in the WWE, you know, 30 years ago. And even with that, you know, nearly 30 years ago, you know, when even the women's division was endorsed by Cyndi Lauper, you know what I mean? When she was really, you know, high, very popular in the mid-80s. And they even had her come out, you know what I mean, and manage WrestleMania. And so nowadays, you know, you have these kind of B-list celebrities come out, and even C-list celebrities come out that didn't have the type of status as Cyndi Lauper did, and you expect us to really buy into it when it comes to the Divas division. You know, no disrespect to Nene Leakes, she's doing, you know, really well with all of her endeavors, but she's not a Cyndi Lauper. I mean, there's no question to that, that she's not a Cyndi Lauper by any stretch. So, you know, if you want to, it's not even about reliving 30 years ago. It's about having a product. If you're trying to evolve and make things better, why can't we say a whole bunch of things that was better, that were better 30 years ago? You know, specifically the Divas division. Why was the Divas division better 30 years ago when it wasn't about, you know, models coming in who didn't know how to wrestle and, you know, wearing next to nothing? It was about people wearing one-piece leotards and you know, selling the house, you know, and selling out as far as being an attraction on the card. People were excited to see, you know, a Wendy Richter against Moolah. People are excited about that. So from now on, the rest of the show, thank you all for participating. You can still participate in the through the chat room and through Twitter at Crave Wrestling with the trivia. But from henceforth, the questions will go to Derek first, and then the chat room. Every now and then we switch it up, and we give Derek the first dibs. Usually on Pancakes and Power Slams, we give the chat room and the trivia. We give the chat room and the Twitter, social media, we give them first dibs at it. And if no one answers it, we resort to our, you know, esteemed Pancakes and Power Slams pro wrestling trivia king, self-proclaimed, because I've proved to be better than him in many cases, but self-proclaimed trivia extraordinaire, Derek.
Blap, blap,
so, blap. So with that being said, what was Batista's name in OVW? What was Batista's name in OVW?
Leviathan.
You got it. That's first one right, one for one. Good job.
Contact in his eyes.
Yep, he sure did. He had the contacts in his eyes. I remember seeing a promo. I don't remember where I was. I think I was like in Dayton. I had some type of engagement to go to, and I was in my hotel room at the. And I saw, because the part of Ohio that I live in didn't show OVW or HWA, and Derek and I are from Ohio. And so, when I went to Dayton, I actually saw I think it was HWA or OVW. It actually came on their television. It actually came on their TV because OVW was based in Kentucky, and HWA was based in Cincinnati. And as you know, and I remember seeing some weird promo of Leviathan, and he was coming out of the waters. They had some type of image of him coming out of the waters, and it looked really scary. It was just really weird. And you know, he later came to be Deacon Batista in 2002. He was the manager of D-Von when they did the SmackDown and Raw draft, and D-Von split from the Dudleys, and then Deacon Batista comes out, and that didn't last too long, thankfully, because it wasn't good. So, but he became a very, very, you know, and nowadays, and it's funny, because nowadays I was thinking about these four people from the class of 2002, and I was thinking about who was the most popular person, just all around the most popular one out of the four. And it was definitely Lesnar. But here's the thing, though. I think that Batista can have the – I think that Batista is on route to being more popular than all four of them. I mean, than all three of them. And it's so funny because it would seem like Batista would be the least popular – you know, from, you know, just the title reigns. I think Batista has like six or so, but around there. But the title reigns and the, you know, just a lack of media exposure. But, hey, when he decided to be an actor, you know, it usually takes a while and you have a few, you know, failures of movies that didn't really last too long. But hey, he got this Drax the Destroyer role in Guardians of the Galaxy, and now he's got there's a sequel coming out in the, booked I think 2016 or 17, and he's got that role, and you know there is reported that he'll have a role in the Avengers movie coming up here, and so he has the opportunity of being the most popular, surprisingly. The most popular one that came out of the four, class of 2002.
Yeah, I agree, and you know, especially with this push with Marvel Comics. I mean, I would give my left arm to be in an Avengers movie. Yeah, and it's I mean, that's great for him. You know, you never saw this in his wrestling career or anything. Oh, he could go on to be almost probably. I don't want to say a bigger star than The Rock in the movies, but, I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy was like the number one movie for a month or so. I mean, like every weekend. It populated so much. I don't think The Rock has yet to have a movie that has that much hype behind it. But
I think Fast Five was good. I think after the other leading character passed away, unfortunately, I think the Fast and Furious movie that came out was pretty good for him.
Definitely he's taken that role, and I mean he couldn't stand toe to toe with Brock Lesnar. It was WWE, but
Paul Walker I was thinking of that passed away, and then Fast 6 came out a little bit after that.
I definitely think that
The Rock has the ability to, you know, he's. I guess my question to you is: do you think that Batista has the ability? Say in 5 years, does Batista has the ability to be more popular than The Rock?
No way. I didn't want to get misconstrued with that. It was just the fact that, you know, Batista's probably been in a movie bigger than what The Rock's been in. But as far as a standalone character that does his own thing and gets by on his God-given talent, The Rock, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know, man. I think that, I don't know with this Marvel Comics popularity that he's having, and I don't know, it just very well might be it might be arguable more in within 5 years than we see now. I definitely think that it could be for sure. So that's where I feel about it. That's my my take that, that she that within, you know, 5 years, you know, he might be he may be as big as The Rock. You know, if he keeps getting these big roles from, you know, Marvel. So we may see that. That would be interesting to see. But kudos to Batista, though. I mean, bottom line, kudos to Batista. You know, he definitely has grown, you know, in his acting career very fast. So, you know, kudos to them. Next, we have Gold and Stardust defeating the Usos. I knew that this was going to happen. I definitely knew that this was going to happen. I don't see the Usos winning the championship anytime soon. Really anytime soon. And Golden Stardust are still on they're still popular. They still have a buzz around them. So, you know, I definitely think that it's worth them keeping the titles and seeing what they're going to do with it. I think that it's pretty safe to say that they are playing the heel role right now. So, you know, what babyface team is out there that can come up and feud with them? I'll be interested to see that.
Yeah, that was a good tag team match. Of course, I knew the Usos were going to lose, and I totally agree. They're not going to have a title run anytime soon. Goldust Stardust, you got to keep that momentum going because they're the most intriguing tag team right now. I mean, just in the ring, they're really liquid. You know, they sell the bumps perfectly. They're great. They're a great team, and they make the most out of those titles. That's the thing. They make the most out of it with their personas and their in-ring ability. Can't deny. You can't give that to anyone else right now.
Yeah. I totally agree. Definitely think that, you know, it'll be very interesting to see where it's going to be. And speaking of Paul Walker, it doesn't seem like he's been dead for almost, he's been dead for nearly a year now. That's quite interesting that, you know, it's been that long, but, yeah, it was really, really sad to see, you know, to know that it happened that way. But, you know, the Rock and the Fast Six movie, really, just the support of that movie that came out. He died in November, I believe it was, and Fast Six came out in May of that year. And Fast Seven will be out in next year. It's slated for next year. So definitely think that's you know, that series is very interesting. I to be honest with you, I think I stopped looking at it within the first three or four, but one of these days I'll catch up to it because I haven't really got into. Sometimes when you have series that are so long, you know, it's just like, you know, you stop looking at them as much. So, did you watch any of the Fast and Furious movies?
I have never seen a Fast and Furious movie.
Really?
I don't know. I'm sure they're great. Or, you know, I don't know. I'm not a, yeah. I like comedies.
Yeah.
I like some suspense horror flicks. Cars and racing or whatever it is, you know. But I'm sure it's got a great plot. I mean, it sounds like there's, like, gangs and whatnot. I have to check it out. You know, I'm not dissing it. I just haven't ever caught it.
Yeah, I mean, the ones that I saw are pretty good, actually. It was very, very good. All right, next we have John Cena defeating Randy Orton, Hell in a Cell. I actually think that this was the better Hell in a Cell of the two. I think that we'll get to the main event, and I was on We Are Wrestling .net's show on Sunday. I was a guest panelist there, and I explained, well, it was after the show, and after the pay-per-view, and I explained how I believe that this was the better Hell in a Cell between the two. I believe that Cena and Orton was, because it was a more wrestling oriented. It was actually a good solid match. I was very impressed with the match, And I mean, there was out there was you know outside you know it was outside action, and I think that it wasn't a big spot fest like the main event was, and I just definitely think that this, especially, and we'll get to you know what we saw at the very end with the return. I think that this should have been the culmination of the evening. I think this should have been the main event, and I like I said, I tweeted you know kudos to Ambrose and Rollins for having the main event spot. You know, just because I think you know now more than ever you need to really. You know, push those new talents and give them that opportunity, but still, I still don't believe that either of those are top billing names or main event names yet. And I'm saying yet very firmly because I don't know if ever really if they'll be, you know, if they are. When I look at the new breed or the new wave of WWE. Maybe Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, but I still don't see it in Seth Rollins. But I can understand why people didn't want this to be the main event, and all the reviews that I saw throughout the you know pro wrestling sites and so forth, they didn't want this match to be the main event because they've seen it for so much, and I agree with that, with you know just throwing the match. Here just to have both names, you know, have a spot on the show. But, I mean, looking at the pay-per-view, it was a pretty solid match. And I would actually give it the rub over the main event just because it wasn't some big spot fest. We actually saw real good pro wrestling action through Cena and Orton. I was actually a bit surprised of what I saw. This was one of the better matches of this rivalry that they've had.
It was great. I mean, it was very good. I totally agree. There was a lot of wrestling in it. And, I mean, these guys have been you know, wrestling so many times. It's probably almost like how many times Flair and Steamboat or Flair and Sting wrestled. I mean, it was just,
yeah.
This is what they do. But this was a really good culmination as far as, you know, the marketing behind it. The intro to the match kind of got me psyched for it. Going into it, I was like, well, it's just another Randy
Orton.
That
package was good. You're right.
But that was the total package. And it was the best match of the night, I believe. And, I can see why they didn't put it as the main event, but, I mean, I thought it was going to be the main event, but it wasn't. But, again, I mean, it pretty much, I think it stole the show. It was, you know, I was watching the whole time, and it's the way they build it, the history between the two, and it's finally come to this head.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to see. I don't think you're going to see them wrestle again until the tides have turned and maybe Orton's face and whatever. But it was a great match, and I was really glad, and they pulled it off. You know, Dallas, it was great.
Yeah, absolutely. Next, we have Sheamus defeating Miz. I knew that Miz wasn't going to get the title. And by the way, I think right now is a good place to say. That I think two or three straight pay-per-views now, I have predicted every match correctly. And I promise I'm not the Dolphin guy from Reddit, but I have predicted every, including this one, I predicted every pay-per-view correctly, top to bottom. And I predicted Sheamus defeating Miz because there's no buzz around Miz. There's buzz around Miz Dow. But Miz as a character, I think it's safe to say that, you know, a few years ago when the Miz won the World Heavyweight Championship, it was a very gutsy move and very brave move for the WWE to make Miz the top guy. I was confused at the time, but, you know, at the time he had a bit of a, you know, a bit of a spark to him, a buzz going around him. And they made him champion, actually had him main event at WrestleMania and beat John Cena. But in hindsight, it's like, wow, he actually had that spot. That is so crazy that I think it was 3 years ago, 27. He had that spot main eventing WrestleMania against John Cena, albeit The Rock interfered and helped the Miz, but he still won. He still main evented the match and won. It was so amazing to even think about that nowadays, because you can even imagine Miz being a main event star, better yet, the world heavyweight champion, and that's so amazing to me to even think about that, because the Miz's character to me, even with the Hollywood thing going on, it's still a mid-card character. And the funniest part of the evening to me was the very end when he got broke kicked, knocked out by Sheamus, and then we saw the YMCA chants, and that was just hilarious to me. And we need more of that to really have Sandow break away from The Miz and become his own character.
Yeah, I mean, The Miz is, I mean, it wasn't supposed to happen that way, I don't think. I mean, Mizdow was not supposed to be this popular, but it's kind of burying The Miz, because people, as soon as Miz comes out, The Miz might as well not even exist, because everyone's looking at Mizdow. And we're going to see this feud, or, you know, it's going to turn into a feud and everything, which is great. I love the way that they're doing it now. But, yeah, The Miz is a nobody as long as Damian Sandow's standing outside of the ring and doing all his gimmicks. And there's no reason he would have won the U.S. Championship. That wouldn't have done anything. If anything, if he would have, then Mizdow would have bought a replica of the U.S. title and wore it around, and that would have been funny for a while. But
yeah.
Or even make a cardboard cutout or something of the U.S. title. And that would have been really funny. But, yeah, you can't take it off Sheamus because Mizdow doesn't have anything right now, and they're just going to focus on The Miz doesn't have anything now. I'm just going to focus on Mizdow and probably have a tangle between the two.
Next, we have Rusev defeating Big Show. Of course, people know that was going to happen. I actually thought, and we'll get to the turn here in a bit, I actually thought the turn was going to happen on Hell in a Cell. I was surprised that it didn't happen, but I knew it was inevitable. I knew it was going to happen, but I thought it was going to happen in Hell in a Cell. But, you know, it was a way to push Rusev, I understand. And my thing is wondering what's next for Rusev. I think a feud with Sheamus would be really good. Winning that U.S. title would be perfect for Rusev. I think, I tell you what, man, there's a lot to say bad about the WWE as far as pushing characters. But I have to say, man, I think the WWE has done a good job with really making Rusev believable. I think that they've done a really good job with that. Going through the list of names that he went through wasn't very impressive. However, I definitely think that Rusev, he's the heel that we've needed for so long. Because like I said before in previous shows, the heels that we see now, they're not heels. They get cheered by people. Rusev is finally that heel that we've been longing for so long. He gets booed. People don't like him. But that's what heels do. They get booed. People don't like heels. And so Rusev is that guy. And I think that they've been developing him very good within the past few months. And I don't know what the payoff is, but I definitely think we should see a U.S. title around his waist or over his shoulder very soon.
That would be great, and the people he's faced, yeah, they haven't been impressive. I mean, they've been kind of lackluster matches. I mean, it looks like start out strong, but you just know Rusev's going to win. Something's going to happen. If he will win the U.S. title, that'd be a great angle to go with, and then have none other than Kurt Angle come out just to take it away from him. Beat him in, like, maybe 3 minutes or something. The match can't go longer than 3 minutes, but I'm talking maybe 6, 7, 8 months down the road. I mean, that would be a perfect scenario.
It's wishful thinking to me because I definitely don't see Kurt Angle coming in anytime soon or at all, really. But I definitely think if someone is going to come in, I think if someone's going to come in and dethrone Rusev as the U.S. champion, It has to be someone from NXT. That's either someone from NXT or someone like a Ryback, and we'll get to Ryback here soon. But I would like a Ryback and Rusev feud. I think that would be pretty cool. I just don't see anyone being that guy to really dethrone Rusev. Maybe Daniel Bryan. Maybe that'll work. I don't see Daniel Bryan being in the main event picture anytime soon. So Daniel Bryan and Rusev, maybe. But I think Rusev needs that type of powerhouse character. Like Kurt Angle would have been perfect because he has the patriotic. I mean, he's as patriotic as you can get as far as, you know, Olympic gold medalists. But I don't see it. I don't see it. The WWE is, there was talks that the WWE offered him in a position, but it was a full-time position that Angle did not accept because, you know, he's injured, and so he wants a part-time schedule. And that doesn't, and that's ridiculous to me too, because you have someone who is not as popular as Kurt Angle with RVD. He gets 3 months on, 3 to 5 months off, 3 months on, and so he has a part-time schedule, but he definitely didn't draw as much as Kurt Angle did. So I don't think it's fair for them to give RVD that type of, and even Jericho, you know, everybody knows Jericho's my boy, but you're giving RVD and Jericho these spots, but you're not giving Kurt Angle the part-time schedule that he wants. I don't think that's fair, and I definitely think that, you know, Kurt Angle coming back for the specific purpose of feuding with Rusev would be huge money for WWE that they just missed out on because of that.
Yeah, it's a Ryback thing would work, but I almost see them. Yeah, Ryback's going to come back with a powerful Feed Me More and everything like he did last night. But, again, I just think they're going to build him up for a few weeks and then he'll just turn into what he was. Yeah, I don't see that much for Ryback. It'd be a great feud for Rusev, but Ryback wouldn't. At the end of the day, Rusev is going to be the guy. In a feud that Rusev is in, if they bring in somebody. Maybe Dan Welks is available.
The Patriot. Yeah, possibly Dan Welks is available. I think the other Patriot was Tom Brandy, who was Salvatore Sincere in the WWE. So maybe Tom Brandy. I think Tom Brandy actually still does the Patriot gimmick. So, or maybe we can. Maybe they can bring in Dugan.
Dugan, yeah, Axel Jim Dugan. Slaughter's still there.
Yeah, Slaughter. I think he was ill recently, so I don't know. I don't think that would work. Maybe Dugan. Maybe they bring in Dugan and have Dugan have his WrestleMania moment. We've explained the Dugan many times in Pancakes and Power Slams. We don't have the time to explain it now, but we'll explain why we call him Dugan and if it happens again. Next, we have AJ Lee defeating Paige. Yeah, I mean, this, like I said early in the show, there's no more layers to this feud, and we just need to see it go away.
It needs to go away, and just with the scripting of the Divas, all that needs to go away. Put all that stuff on E. Just, forget about it.
Yep. And then finally, we see Seth Rollins defeating Dean Ambrose. Like I said, man, I just didn't buy this match. I mean, it's one thing to have authentic. I mean, it looked like it was authentic spots. Yeah, a spot's a spot. It's, you have to make sure you're safe. So, a lot of spots are talked over. But when you had, it seemed like they really tried to recreate '98 King of the Ring Hell in a Cell with this match, with the few as far as the spots are concerned. And it's like, come on now, you have the camera by the Spanish announce table. Ooh, it so happens to be by the Spanish announce table. not the Spanish announce table, but it was by the English announce table, the American announce table, and it somehow, you know, it just so happens to be by the American announce table. And so, of course, we're going to see a spot. I mean, come on now. You just have to be a little bit more spontaneous in the camera action to make us not believe that we're going to see a spot. And it was just a spot fest for me. It was just a little bit too confusing, and just the goons being involved. And it just wasn't really a lot of pure wrestling involved. And it was just like a glorified hardcore match in the cell. Like, I just, it wasn't a bad match in any stretch, but it just wasn't a really believable match to me to be the main event of the night. And the Bray Wyatt interference was just absolutely horrible to me. There's nothing left about Bray Wyatt as a babyface that will work. This is going to lead to nothing. Yeah, we'll see probably some good, decent matches between Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose. But at the end, so what? It doesn't lead to anything. And it's not going to lead to a title. It's not going to lead to a better push by any one of them. And if they're using Dean Ambrose to make Bray Wyatt a better heel and go up the ladder, no, it's just not going to work. It's just a spot filler between the two, because essentially, really, after this, the match or Hell in a Cell, and the feud that we're seeing now between Dean Ambrose and Bray Wyatt, to me, it just really shows that WWE really don't know what to do with either of these two people in the long run.
Well, they don't, and it was a very makeshift match. It was like, okay, we're here, we're here, we're here, we're here. There was no spontaneity. Everyone knew what was going to happen. And this is where I don't think they want to put Dean Ambrose as the main guy yet. So they're going to derail him from, you know, chasing Seth Rollins to now having to feud with Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
I mean, they should have let the feud go on a little longer, but they're not going to, evidently. So they're just going to take these two misfits, see what they can do with them, you know. And Dean Ambrose, he's going to benefit from anything, hopefully, as far as, you know, his in-ring talent's fine. But the Bray Wyatt curse, I don't see what's going to happen with it. And, you know, it's same thing with Bray Wyatt. I don't see how the two could benefit unless they learn how to really tear the house down and make their feud that great. But WWE probably won't let them even do that.
Yeah. We got Raw coming up.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, hosted by Chris Featherstone and Derek of Crave Wrestling. This is the new Tuesday Night Titans.
Indeed, it is the new Tuesday Night Titans. On Raw, we saw the Authority come out with the in-ring promo introducing Seth Rollins. Randy Orton appears, yells and scuffles with Rollins, and then Triple H calls him down for a bit, but Orton RKOs Rollins. I was okay with this. I just don't know how I'm going to feel about the Orton face turn. It seems like they're teasing that. Maybe he'll be a member of Team Cena. I'm interested to see if they turn Orton face again. It's not going to be as bland as it was before he was heel. So Orton as a face, I'm not sold on. But I think Orton and Rollins may be a decent feud to help out Rollins. Maybe, I don't know. Hopefully, because if they're gonna give us Rollins, they have a lot of work to do with Seth Rollins to develop his character.
They've got a lot to do, and maybe Randy Orton can help him out with it. You know, Randy Orton wouldn't really benefit from it too much, other than he's got a face turn, and you know, everyone start cheering him and put him into whatever status he's trying to look for. But, I mean, it could benefit Rollins, but, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. It's one of those I can't really pinpoint and say what a year from now where these two individuals are going to be. But looking at the way things are going, you know, we'll see what's going to happen. It'll be interesting, none the least.
Yeah. And then just the rest of the card, because we're running out of time here, we want to get to the Flavor of the Week, which is Survivor Series 1987 to 1990. It's going to be pretty fun. So we'll just go through this, the Raw results today, and then we'll go just some takeaways for them. We see the Henry turn with Big Show and Mark Henry against Golden Stardust. We see a Roman Reigns exclusive interview, AJ Lee defeating Alicia Fox. Then we get John Cena on the mic, and then we get the Authority come out, Stephanie and Triple H, and then that's when the SummerSlam main event was announced, Team Cena versus Team Authority. Usos defeating Miz and Mizdow. And then we see a Hulk Hogan entering segment promoting the Susan G. Komen. Ryback returns to be the mystery partner for mystery opponent against Bo Dallas. Ambrose going against Cesaro, but Ambrose attacking Cesaro before the match even starts the mic. And then calling out Bray Wyatt, and we see another Bray Wyatt Titantron promo. Nikki Bella defeating Naomi for the 80th time. Ziggler defeating Kane. And then we see Seth Rollins coming out and attacking Ziggler and Cena making the save. That leads to Cena defeating Rollins by DQ because of a Kane interference. And Ziggler appearing. He gets outnumbered by Mercury and Noble. Then all of a sudden the whole roster comes out. That was odd. And then Cena, AA, Slater, and Dallas, Bo Dallas, which are the last two people in there after everybody just threw everybody else out. And then we see the Authority retreating to the stage. Wasn't a very good follow-up Raw after the pay-per-view to me. I really hope that they do a good job resetting this. And it just really goes to show how much they're just talent deprived, for one. And they're not, and here's the thing, they're not really talent deprived. They're main event talent deprived right now, especially with Lesnar out, for a few months being the world champ, and just doesn't make any sense at all. Just a few takeaways for me, that the Henry turn, it was a good turn, but it's not going to lead anywhere. I mean, it's just Mark Henry is going to lose even more, so it's about time for him to wrap it up to me. I was so upset about the Roman Reigns interview. We don't need to see Roman Reigns. The thing is, if you overexpose someone or something, it loses its mystique. We want to see a Roman Reigns appearance that's going to be shocking, that's going to be out of nowhere. That's really going to give him the pops that he needs. Otherwise, if you keep shoving Roman Reigns down our throats, people aren't going to like him. And just the Hulk Hogan segment, that was good. Good to see Ryback back as a face, and I'm glad that they did that. However, as I was telling Ryan earlier today, I wish they would have had him return a little bit different. I wish that he would have been the mystery person for John Cena, either the Raw before Survivor Series or at Survivor Series. I wish he would have came back that way, because I think he would have got, I think it would have made his return a little bit more meaningful. And I agree with Derek. I just think, and I hope that this doesn't happen, because the Feed Me More chance was working. He got pops. It was back to the old Ryback of, when he first debuted. The Feed Me More chance was very popular. And, 2 years ago, this month, he had his best opportunity, almost won the world title in the Hell in a Cell match against CM Punk. But, without a world heavyweight championship there anymore, everybody who's a mid-card talent really has a glass ceiling to them, because there's no more world heavyweight championship. Because of the titles merging, that just really leaves a lot of mid-card wrestlers just without really a purpose. The Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose segment didn't do anything to further the storyline to me, and it didn't do anything to make it make sense. It didn't do anything to make the appearance of Bray Wyatt and the attack of Dean Ambrose didn't do anything to make sense at all. And Dolph Ziggler's getting a bit of a push to side with John Cena. I'm okay with that. So those were my big takeaways from Raw.
Yeah, he pretty much hit the nail on the head. It was a decent Raw. It was okay. Like you said, it doesn't really, like, Hell in a Cell, totally forgotten about. Never. Now it's Survivor Series. This is what we're pushing at. And, that's good. we still have some lingering ghosts from the pay-per-view that just happened less than 24 hours ago. But on the Survivor Series, they're going to do the classic Survivor Series. We all know that. Rollins versus Cena at the end with everyone running out. To me, that didn't do anything. It was just stupid. I mean, why does the whole roster care about these two all of a sudden? And Cesaro and Ambrose, Wyatt interrupting. It's, again, it's just fueling the fire, which, I mean, they've got no – I mean, they're locked into the storyline now. They have to do it. And so wherever that goes, we'll see. And Uso, Sandow, and Miz, you know, same old stuff. Really, the Raw last night was just subpar, mediocre to what a Raw after a pay-per-view should be. So not a whole lot going on, but let's wrap this up and get to the flavor of the week.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
1987 Survivor Series, and Derek and I are the same age, so we were both little ones at that time, and but we were still avid wrestling fans, and so yeah, very very interesting. Concept that they debuted in Survivor Series 1987 of a traditional Thanksgiving-style tag match, a multi-person tag match, five-on-five. You had, and the funny thing about this, it was really revolved around Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant feud, and it was just a way to, it was a way to extend their feud, and of course, we saw the, you know, the segment that led to the turn where he was jealous that Andre the Giant was jealous that he got a smaller trophy, which is a very interesting way to turn heel. I got a smaller trophy than you did, so now I'm upset, and now I'm and Bobby Heenan's going to really manipulate me to believe that I should be jealous of you. I mean, the storyline writing back then was just so amazing to me. Like, it just really brought the larger-than-life approach to pro wrestling that someone – I mean, that's a real-life thing. Like, yeah, I'm jealous that you have a bigger trophy than I have, and I'm not going to be second fiddle to you anymore. I mean, that's just amazing to me. And, of course, the turn happened, and he rips the necklace away from him, you know, rips the necklace off of him, and Hogan's just befuddled and shocked and surprised, and it leads to WrestleMania III. And then the same year, we got Survivor Series of 1987, first year, and it was a Thanksgiving tradition. And I loved it. And it was a very, very interesting concept to really further this storyline. And Team Hogan and Team Andre was the main event of the evening. And throughout the show, I think it was about four or so other matches that was a part of the show that night. As a matter of fact, it was four matches. The first match was Randy Savage, Jake Roberts, Ricky Steamboat, Brutus Beefcake, and Jim Dugan defeating the Honky Tonk Man, Hercules, Danny Davis, Ron Bass, and Harley Race. And three of the matches were 5-on-5, and the other match before the main event was the it was the 20-man tag team. That was really cool. But speaking of women's wrestlers, perfect segue into a flavor of the week. Fabulous Moolah, Rockin' Robin, Velvet McIntyre, and the Jumping Bomb Angels defeated Sensational Sherry and the Glamour Girls, and also Don Marie and Donna Crisanello. And that was for the that was the women's version of the 5-on-5 Survivor Series. And then the 20-man tag match, who would ever, you know, forget that? Just 20-man tag team Survivors match. That's amazing. You have all those teams in the WWE at that time. You had Strikeforce, Young Stallions, the Rougeau Brothers, the Killer Bees, the Bulldogs. They defeated the Hart Foundation, Demolition, the Islanders, the Bolsheviks, and the Dream Team. And it was just an amazing sight to see all of those teams there. And of course, Andre's team defeated the Faces. And real quick for this main event, kudos to Ken Patera, man. Towards the late 80s, he kind of navigated into a babyface role, as we know that he was a member of the Heenan family late 70s, and he was one of the best heels in the late 70s, but he transitioned into a babyface, and he was a part of the very first Survivor Series. So, and Oliver Humperdinck was with Bam Bam Bigelow. If I remember, the last two people in that match was Andre. Well, the last member of Team Hogan was Bam Bam, and I remember Andre pinning Bam Bam to end the match. And so Andre had his moment onto the first Survivor Series. He won up Hogan.
Yeah, I've seen that Survivor Series numerous times on VHS, and it was great. And it actually took place here in Ohio, and that's weird because it was in a random place that, you know, they've never returned to.
Yeah, Richmond.
Yeah, so,
the Richmond Coliseum.
It started out the great tradition, which, you know, finally ended up being just another pay-per-view. However, the late 80s, early 90s, it was still, like, it was an exciting pay-per-view. I loved it. So, great.
Yeah.
That was the who's who in wrestling in 1987.
Rich Field, I meant to say. Interestingly enough, the next year, Survivor Series was in the same place. It was in Richfield, Ohio. It's not a very – us Ohioans would know that it's not a very popular city. Richfield, Ohio, for them to have the Survivor Series there, kudos to Richfield that they were able to have it there. Four matches for the 88 Survivor Series as well. Andre the Giant's team won again. They were the last to the main event. Ken Patera was in the babyface team of the Survivor Series in 88 too, but it wasn't on a bigger, as big of a scale as it was in 87. The bigger scale match was the Mega Powers having a team, and it was really revolved around Hogan and Savage that year, and of course their subsequent match. Leading into the next WrestleMania. So that's what I really liked about Survivor Series. It was such a good setup to the matches. It was a really good setup to the upcoming months. So I was really a big fan of how they booked Survivor Series, because everything was so tied in together as far as storylines are concerned. I absolutely loved it. Like the Ultimate War, the Honky Tonk Man, they were feuding, and Team Ultimate Warrior was him, Beefcake, Sam Houston, and the Blue Blazer, and Jumping Jim Brazel. They beat the Honky Tonk Man's team, which had Ron Bass, Bad News Brown, Danny Davis, and Greg Valentine. And also another tag team elimination match we saw. The Powers of Pain, the Rockers, the British Bulldogs, the Hart Foundation, and the Young Stallions defeated Demolition, the Brainbusters, the Bolsheviks, the Rougeaux, and the Conquistadors. So it was the similar to the one the year before in 87. And then, of course, the main event was the Mega Powers, which was, of course, Hogan and Savage, and then Hercules, Coco Beware, and Hillbilly Jim defeating the Heels, which was the Twin Towers, Akeem and the Big Boss Man, Ted DiBiase, Haku, and the Red Rooster. And, of course, we would see that a couple months later, it's when the Mega Powers exploded and led to the match at WrestleMania. And then Hogan and Savage went against the Twin Towers, interestingly enough. So in that time where they officially exploded and Savage made his turn. So just really, really good booking leading into further months and into WrestleMania. So this is why the Survivor Series concept was so amazing at the time. And it was on Thanksgiving
great.
Day every year for the first two or so years. It was on Thanksgiving Day, and that's what made it even better.
Thanksgiving Day before Black Friday. And,
yep.
Again, it was just another who's who. I mean, I think it was probably the first appearance of the Rockers. I'm pretty sure it was the first appearance of Mr. Perfect. Again, it was just anybody who's a wrestling fan should watch these early mid-80s pay-per-views. And just this
yep.
is the format. This is what wrestling should be. This is what it is. I mean, you can't beat those. You just can't. I mean, it was just so story writing, just the talent. You don't have names like that anymore. And I don't know if it's just because I'm an old guy and I like to hang on to the past and say nothing's better than what it used to be. But I really can't say that it is. It just it was so such a beautiful product back then. You just got
yeah.
so hyped, so excited for it. But
yep.
You just don't see that.
89 was... We had five matches, and they were all 4-on-4 matches. It lasted about between 20 and 30 minutes long, 20 and 28 minutes they all lasted. And this was, again, on Thanksgiving Day. And for the first, I don't know, probably throughout the 80s, I think all of them were in Thanksgiving, maybe one or two in the 90s. But, yeah, that Thanksgiving tradition was awesome. Real quick, the main event was the Ultimate Warriors, which was Ultimate Warrior, the Rockers, and Jim Neidhart defeating the Heenan family, which was Andre the Giant, Haku, Arn Anderson, and Bobby Heenan, which was a very interesting sight to see. And then Rowdy's Rowdies lost to the Rude Brood. Rick Rude, Mr. Perfect, and the Rougeos, and then Piper, Snuka, and the Bushwhackers. Then the Dream Teams opened up the show, which was Dusty Rhodes, Brutus Beefcake, Red Rooster, and Tito Santana. They beat the Enforcers, which was the Big Boss Man, Bad News Brown, Rick Martel, and Honky Tonk Man. And then the King's Court, Randy Savage, Canadian Earthquake, Dino Bravo, and Greg Valentine. Defeated the 4x4s, which was Dugan's group, with him, Hart, Ronnie Garvin, and Hercules. And then in the middle, the third match of the night, was the Hulkamaniacs defeating the Million Dollar Team. The Million Dollar Team comprised of DiBiase, Powers of Pain, and also Zeus. And then Hulk Hogan and Jake Roberts and Demolition was the... Hulkamaniacs. Really, really good 4-on-4, all 4-on-4 pay-per-view. It was a really, really amazing tradition. It was absolutely awesome to see that pay-per-view.
It was great, and this is the first year, I believe, that they actually had names for the team. So it was,
yeah.
It was quite an exciting year. 1989 was, the Mega Powers explode, so they held on to that as much as they could. And it was great. It was a great time in wrestling.
Yep. Real quick, about a minute left on the show. 1990 was revolved around the grand finale, the one and only. We had Hogan, Warrior, and Tito winning their respective matches, being the sole survivors, and Rick Martel, the Warlord, and Power and Glory. They were the survivors of their matches. And Hogan, Warrior, and Tito, although being in a handicap position, it was 3 versus 4, they won their match, and it was a really good concept to that year.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, 1990 was the tail end of the 80s, as far as I'm concerned. And,
debut of The Undertaker, too.
Yep, Undertaker came out first time, and everyone knows what happened with him. But great flavor of the week. I can't wait to continue it next week.
Yep, the Survivor Series next week. We'll talk about 91 to 95, so stay tuned with us. Great Hell in a Cell talk. And I got a trivia question that I'll place on the Pancakes and Power Slams Crave Wrestling Facebook site coming up here soon, so stay tuned to that. Until next week, have a great week. Enjoy your wrestling. Daddy loves Elijah, and God bless. Goodbye.